Blog Talk Radio.
What's wrong with being an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Do you want to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times.
Then grab it.
Mary had a little man that
was
quite a snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the man was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said nagada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Reese.
And welcome to the show, folks. It's Reese on the radio, live here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the radio. And welcome to your week. It is Monday, January 30th, 2012. We are just days away from my favorite time of year, and that's Black History Month, folks. That's right. I love it more than anything in the world, and that is Black History Month. Oh, man, have we got a Black History Month in store for you. It's called This Week in Black History. We're going to air it every Friday. You will hear real stories about black people you never, ever knew before. Or maybe you forgot. You might not remember. But we'll get into it. Plenty of news going on today. Plenty of stories. Plenty of things to jar around in your brain and make commentary about. And, you know, Monday is always, you know, supposed to be like a news-filled day because, you know, there's stuff that happens over the weekend that you heard about. And, you know, we don't want to crank out old news. We don't like to do that. But if it's something relevant enough, we talk about it here. The number is 347-308-8701, and you can, of course, log on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. Send an email at ReeseOnTheRadio@Yahoo.com. Some of the stories that we have to you today, I find incredibly entertaining. And this one in particular, because it created quite an argument over the past couple of weeks. And that is about the President of the United States. And Republican presidential candidate Newt Gingrich. Now, everyone has heard this moniker that's been placed on President Obama as the food stamp president. Now, I went back and everyone is checking the facts, making sure that Newt Gingrich is telling the truth, because everyone wants to defend the president of the United States. They don't want to suggest that this man is for people being on food stamps. And the guy couldn't have possibly put more people on food stamps than George W. Bush did. George W. Bush was president for 8 years. It's impossible that that could have happened. Truth is, you know what? Technically, they're right. If the argument's going to be made, who is the food stamp president? President Obama is right. He is not the food stamp president. According to the numbers, I will say it here. George W. Bush was and is the food stamp president, if we're going to use that moniker. Because more people were on food stamps in 8 years than Obama's 3 years. But what are the numbers? As we've expressed them here on this show, Reese on the Radio, in 8 years, 14.7 million people have gone on the dole, are on the SNAP program. 14.7 million people were on food stamps from 2001 until January 2009. That's January 2001 until January of 2009. 14.7. Barack Obama has been president now for just over 3 years, and his number is at 14.2. That means in half the time, he has just come 500,000 people short. in 3 years. But I want people to rethink. To rethink this food stamp president comment by Newt Gingrich. You see, calling him the food stamp president isn't about the numbers. If you've listened to any one of Newt Gingrich's speeches about the subject, he suggests that this president wants more people on food stamps than getting a job. No one is addressing that issue. They just want to argue the numbers. And look, I'm the first one to say it. Hey, our good friend Kool-Aid Man would be the first one to say it, Mr. James Montgomery. He'd be the first one to say it. Reese, you always talk about how numbers don't lie, but you know what? Numbers don't lie. And you know what? Sometimes proof is right out of the horse's mouth. The Secretary of Agriculture is a gentleman by the name of Tom Vilsack. A lot of you wouldn't know him because a lot of you don't care. But see, the food stamp program is a program run out of the Department of Agriculture. That is where people get their food stamps from, the Department of Agriculture. And if this administration, the Obama administration, is not to be called the food stamp administration, then someone please explain why Tom Vilsack said this.
Mr. Secretary, good morning. Many people don't know that actually food stamps falls under the Department of Agriculture, and a report was just released that one in seven Americans now are currently on food stamps. What's being done right now and kind of being done going forward that you think is really addressing poverty and the poor within the country and bringing some alleviation to those kind of numbers?
Well, obviously it's putting people to work, which is why we're going to propose some interesting things during the course of the forum this morning. Later this morning, we're going to have a press conference with myself and Secretary Mabus and Secretary Chu to announce something that's never happened in this country, which we think is exciting in terms of job growth. But I should point out that when you talk about the SNAP program or the food stamp program, you have to recognize that it's also an economic stimulus. Every dollar of SNAP benefits generates $1.84 in the economy in terms of economic activity. If people are able to buy a little more in the grocery store, then someone's got to stock it, shelve it, package it, process it, ship it. All of those are jobs. It's the most direct stimulus you can get into the economy during tough times. The reason why these numbers have gone up is that we've done a pretty good job of working with states that had done a poor job in the past in getting the word out about this program. States like California and Texas and Florida underperformed. We're now working with them to make sure that people who are eligible get the benefits, and therefore help stimulate their local economy.
So did you hear what Tom Vilsack said? He said the reason why the food stamp numbers are going up is because they're promoting more and more programs for people to go on food stamps. So for the defense, I rest my freaking case. The Department of Agriculture is telling us. Now, see, the question that was being asked by the gentleman at MSNBC was, what are you doing for poor people? He redirects the question and says, what I'm doing is a good thing by putting more and more people on food stamps. He says that putting people on food stamps generates jobs. Right? Because the more people who want goods and services, that means that these keeps these people who are already employed. It doesn't create new jobs. How does it create new jobs? I don't understand how it creates new jobs, but he says that food stamps equal jobs because someone's got to stock it, package it, ship it, because people want. So in essence, we're paying for people to. If you're saying it's a stimulus, it's the government paying for goods to be shipped to people for free. But it's not for free. We end up paying for it. It doesn't generate anything in the economy. It's a dollar being put into a community by the government. How is that spurring any growth? And Tom Vilsack is clearly saying that the reason why the numbers have been growing is because they have a concerted effort to make the numbers grow. Because they believe that food stamps are good for the economy. How is that possible? And how is Newt Gingrich wrong? Can the argument be made clearly that President Obama is the food stamp president? If his administration, the Secretary of Agriculture, is clearly setting out to get more people out there on food stamps to make sure that more and more people get their benefits? I mean, if you need to hear it again, let's do it one more time. Just listen to him.
Mr. Secretary, good morning. Many people don't know that actually food stamps falls under the Department of Agriculture, and a report was just released that that one in seven Americans now are currently on food stamps. What strategies, what's being done right now and kind of being done going forward that you think is really addressing poverty and the poor within the country and bringing some alleviation to those kind of numbers?
Well, obviously, it's putting people to work, which is why we're going to propose some interesting things during the course of the forum this morning. Later this morning, we're going to have a press conference with myself and Secretary Mabus and Secretary Chu to announce something that's never happened in this country, which we think is exciting in terms of job growth. But I should point out that when you talk about the SNAP program or the food stamp program, you have to recognize that it's also an economic stimulus. Every dollar of SNAP benefits generates $1.84 in the economy in terms of economic activity. If people are able to buy a little bit more in the grocery store, then someone's got to stock it, shelve it, package it, process it, ship it. All of those are jobs. It's the most direct stimulus you can get into the economy during tough times. The reason why these numbers have gone up is that we've done a pretty good job of working with states that had done a poor job in the past in getting the word out about this program. States like California and Texas and Florida underperformed. We're now working with them to make sure that people who are eligible get the benefits, and therefore help stimulate their local economy.
We need to get more and more people on this program. There were states that were underperforming with getting people on the food stamp program. States like California, underperforming. People who didn't know that they can get their benefits. Do you understand what he's saying about California? Who do you think those food stamps are going to? Huh? Take one wild guess. Illegals. People who didn't know how to get on food stamps before. What we're doing is we're making sure that these people know how to get their benefits. We're getting more and more people on them. Please tell me, is it official? Is Barack Obama the food stamp president? It's an initiative to get people on food stamps. How can Newt Gingrich be wrong? This is a man, Tom Vilsack, who is trying to change the narrative. By the way, the reporter or the gentleman asking the question was a black man asking, how can we alleviate the problem? He's not asking Tom Vilsack how we can get more food stamps. He's saying, how do we get more and more people off? But what does Vilsack do? He corrects him. He says, first, you got to understand that food stamps is a good thing. We need to get more and more people on the food stamp program. There are people out there who didn't know the food stamps are out there. We try to get those people out there. It's an entire effort to get more and more people on the food stamp program. You got it wrong there, Mr. Black Man. Food stamps ain't a bad thing. We need more and more people on it. This is a stimulus program. It's part of the whole stimulus package. So I know I'm not off my rocker. I know I'm not out of my mind. Now, look, I got to do this. I hate to. But this is just one of those things that I have to do because, this is a discussion. Well, you know what? We'll wait. Let's bring in the crew. JC, of course, and our good friend Mary Mary, why you bugging? Okay, argument made.
Oh. Argument has been made. It's sealed, signed, and delivered.
Okay. There's nothing else to say. Here it is that the Secretary of Agriculture saying that this is an effort to get more and more people on food stamps. The reason why you've seen the number grow, getting involved in the can the argument be put to bed? Barack Obama is initiating food stamps. country.
Well, hell, I want some of those.
Me too.
But now,
can I get food stamps and work?
But again, he's not. He's talking about they've got a job program. Well, I'm dying to hear what this jobs program is. Nothing's worked so far. But I mean,
what jobs program did he talk about? Because I didn't hear that. I heard that. I want to know what they were going to be having a meeting about, that they were going to introduce this new program, this new effort that they haven't introduced before.
Well, exactly. I've never ever heard it before. I've heard nothing about this particular thing. But, you know, when I saw a link to this audio, the first thing that went through my mind was, why didn't anybody at the White House stop him? Why wouldn't anybody come forward and say, hey, Tom, I had that wrong. We're not really, really trying to get more people on food stamps.
Because that's what they're trying to do, and they don't care. Because there are ignorant people out there that are going to say, oh, they're doing so much for the poor. They're doing so much for the middle class. We're going to vote for him again. That's why.
Isn't it creating a false narrative? You see my point, is that what he's trying to do is control the...
What he says is, I guess very true, and in a sense that, I mean, just recently, we have a huge food stamp quagmire going on right here in the state of Connecticut as we speak. I don't know why it is, whenever we're doing national news, there's always some direct situation here in Connecticut that kind of corresponds with what you're saying.
Really?
Did you say really?
Yeah, really.
Okay, well, let me run it to you real quick. Back when we had Hurricane Irene.
Go ahead.
Back when we had Hurricane Irene that came in as a hurricane.
I remember that.
And knocked out power to Connecticut residents.
Some people were out for 45 days.
We're out. A lot of them was out power for 10 to 11 days.
Okay.
And those people who lost their food because of the lack of power were given the opportunity to line up for food stamps, whether you worked or not.
Okay.
You didn't have to be. You only qualified for them. I take it back. If you were already getting food stamps,
okay,
they gave you 100% of what you normally get per month.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't qualify for food stamps or wasn't on a SNAP program, you were able to line up at the state, and depending on how much, the size of your family.
Okay.
Didn't really have a lot to do with income guidelines, because, I mean, I know some folks who had gone down there, and for one example, one lady that I know went down there, and she's got two kids, but she makes about maybe $90,000 a year.
Okay.
But she went down there, and they gave her $547 in food stamps to cover the cost of what she lost during the storm. What they covered was what she lost in her fridge and the money that she paid for food during the storm to feed her family. And then they turned around and did it a month later. Remember, that was in September.
Right.
October, we had the freak snowstorm, which knocked power out again for a week.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And those people, they weren't given, only the people that were already on food stamps were given replacement food stamps, just not as much. Because of the timing of the storm, because it happened towards the end of the month, and you were able to get your re-up of food stamps at the beginning of the month, because that storm came on October 29th.
I do remember that.
But you were given like, I think everyone was given like $45 extra, a couple days worth extra in their food stamps to to supplement what they lost in that. I mean, me personally, I didn't lose power.
Oh, you didn't?
And no, I didn't lose power. Hell, I wish I did. I wish I did during the hurricane. But I know, come on, I mean, we have a foot of snow outside. We had about 2 feet of snow. I mean, my milk could have sat in a snowbank.
Well, that's actually a smart deal.
Absolutely. I mean, you have all of those Seal Saving Server bags. Throw your lunch meat in the bag. Stick it in a snowbank. You had refrigeration.
That's right. My mom used to do that when we were kids.
Hell, listen. I still stick soda up on my windshield. on my windowsill.
Yeah. Sometimes it does save. I mean, it saves energy. I mean, I think it's a smart idea to save energy. What I find incredibly odd about all of this, and why it's for me personally, it's so ridiculous that he would make the argument that he's not the food stamp president, and then allow this statement to come out there, is to me personally, this is trying to adhere to a certain quality of life. I think personally, I think he's reaching out to a certain constituency that wants food stamps, that thinks that food stamps are a good thing because it's government help, it's assistance, and they like that word. And using that word to a lot of people means that they're, you know, the government's doing a good thing for you, which is bogus.
But see, but then again, Reeves, and I made this statement last week, and I'll say it again. Now, you found this story where?
I found this on Breitbart. Breitbart TV.
Breitbart TV, which generally covers what, politics?
Right, exactly. But it's on MSNBC. That's a national television network.
Okay, exactly. Yeah, MSNBC, and you've got Kardashians, The Games. No. BET, Centric, the new Bounce Network. And, hell, you got My Young and the Restless and Bold and the Beautiful floating around while these things are being reported. Who's watching? No one, especially minorities, are watching this.
Yeah, but
we don't watch. We don't follow.
I know.
We watch TV for entertainment, not to be informed. If we want to be informed, we watch the 5:30 news, the 6 o'clock news, and the 11 o'clock news.
Which is never,
and that's the God's honest truth.
It's sad, but you know.
And you know what else? After the first 11 minutes of the news, we're on to something else, because that in the first 11 minutes is when they tell you who got shot, who got raped, who got robbed.
Yeah, I mean, again, so look, the argument, as far as I'm concerned, is dead. This is a food stamp administration. They're doing everything that they want, that they can, to make sure more and more people are on food stamps. There can't be any argument made aside from that.
The argument where you're concerned is dead, but as far as the numbers, and it's the one that they're going to make sure that they're exaggerated, make sure the point's exaggerated anyways, that Obama, that Gingrich called him the food stamp president when clearly Bush had more people on food stamps. Regardless of how much time he had been in office, like you said, Bush is officially, until Obama gets more people on food stamps than Bush does, Bush is officially the food stamp president.
But that would make Newt Gingrich wrong.
If we're going by numbers, you're right. Go ahead, Mary.
But if we're going by numbers, then
numbers don't lie.
No, excuse me. If we're going by numbers, then Bush was in office for 8 years.
Doesn't matter.
Barack has only been there for 3.
Doesn't matter.
So if we're going by true numbers.
It doesn't matter. We're going by administrations.
And the problem is that 1 in 7 people are on food stamps, and for every $1 that you receive in food stamps or that you spend in food stamps, is stimulating the economy $1.89, I think is what they said.
Yeah. And you know what the sad part is?
For those 1 in 7 people that are on food stamps and not working and not paying any taxes, how much money are we losing?
Exactly.
And the sad part is there are still people in this country starving.
It's very sad that there are people in this country starving. And for those people that need to be on food stamps, those people that don't have any other means, that are either, you know, disabled, they can't work, or whatever, I'm all about trying to help your neighbor. But for those people, for those mass amounts of people that are out there that are on food stamps just because they can get on food stamps and they don't have to work because they choose not to work, they're ready and able to work, that is what I have a problem with.
No, they're not ready and able. They're able, they're just not ready.
Well, I don't know if they're not ready, but, you know, that in and of itself is a huger issue. You know, the manufacturing jobs have left this country in record numbers. And the reason why they've left is because, of course, wages in places like China. I just read a report in the New York Times.
And the call centers.
Yes, exactly. I just read a story in the New York Times about 2 weeks ago talking about the Apple, one of the Apple distributing companies. They hire people at $17 a day, and it's a facility that houses about 60,000 of their 250,000 employees right on the premises. And 17 days. In fact, before that, which sounds even crazier, is that a couple of years ago there was an issue at this particular plant that now provides software for the Apple company, that they had people who were committing suicide because their wages were too low, and now it's at $17. They actually raised their wages to $17 a day.
Jumping off buildings.
Yeah, there's nobody in this country that would work for $17 a day, and there's no manufacturer here that's going to build a facility that houses 60,000 people. They're never, ever going to be able to do it. So, you know, food stamps to this administration seems like the best thing to do. Regulate more companies so that you can continue to tax them in any way that you can. Take more money out of corporations so that you can, again, redistribute the wealth of those organizations and, you know, keep people on the dole. It's a joke. And I think the argument is pretty much a moot point at this juncture that Barack Obama clearly is the food stamp president. It is the initiative of the
Department. Don't your name.
Well, okay, but I think that when you have someone like the Department of Agriculture, someone at the Department of Agriculture saying that they are making an effort to put more and more people on there, I think Newt Gingrich has already made his point. It's proven. This administration wants more people on food stamps and not with a job.
Are you speaking as a visionary?
Well, who's a visionary here?
Newt.
Well, I think he's got it right. What happened? He's got it right. I mean, I don't think there's any other way to put it. I mean, I think he's clearly got it right.
No, in present tense, please come on. He's wrong in present tense, but
yeah.
If Obama gets reelected. Absolutely. I mean, try this argument 3 years down the line if he gets reelected. And he's gonna, because Romney can't win.
Yeah.
All right, who's gonna get reelected? Did you say Barack's gonna get reelected?
Mark my word.
You really think he's... I don't think so. I don't think
Romney can't beat him.
Well, trust me. Somebody's gotta beat him. You know, and this point's got to be driven home. But anyway, we'll be back. Great story, and coming up about a man whose picture was doctored. It's a very strange story. We'll be back at Teresa on the Radio.
An Olympics hit by scandal and deficits. He rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits. Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey, guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dan Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
Hey guys, we're back. It's Reese on the Radio, live on blogtalkradio.com. Of course, you can always check out reeseontheradio.com, whatever you like. You get archives of the show. You can just log on right here to blogtalkradio.com/reeseontheradio. In the event that there's anything that you missed. There was a story that I saw this morning that I found. For me, it was a little odd, because if there's one thing that I can't stand, it's false advertising. And false advertising happens often, but we don't always see it. You know, we're, you know, somebody says that they've got the best this, the best that, you know, JP Power and Associates, JD Power and Associates, you know, Auto Trend Car of the Year. You know, that stuff doesn't bother me because if I'm not purchasing it, I don't care. You know, if I purchase something that, you know, I went based upon somebody's, you know, report and it ends up sucking completely, you know, fine, then I'll have some beef. So I don't usually have that much beef with it. But when I do have beef is when, again, it's creating that false narrative I so often talk about. A gentleman was in the news today, and he's an overweight guy. I checked out some of the videos of him. You can look him up yourself. His name is Cleo Berry. He's an overweight actor from Los Angeles. He's actually co-starred and had a bit role in a on the TV show House on Fox. He played a bellman what do you call those people? Yeah, something like that. Whatever. He works in sort of the acting field. He's done some commercials locally in Los Angeles. He has a funny commercial, the Oklahoma State Lottery. He's got a great commercial, which is kind of funny. He seems like a comedic actor. He's a chubby, very, very kind-looking gentleman. Very, very happy-go-lucky. And, he's been in the acting game for a little while now, but according to the story, and I'll break it down to you, it says an overweight man in Los Angeles says that he was beyond shocked to discover an altered photo of him on New York City billboards. And he tells the New York Times that while living in New York City several years ago, he participated in a $500 photo shoot with a photographer. But unbeknownst to Cleo Berry, those photos were then sold to Image Source, which is a stock photo company. The stock photo was then sold to New York City's Department of Health, who digitally altered the photo to remove Cleo Berry's right leg. Now, the reason why they altered the photo is because the photo in the ad is an anti-diabetes campaign. Cleo Berry says, "I cried at my computer screen for like a minute at first seeing the altered photo. I said, oh my gosh, they gave me crushes. Come on, people." He didn't even understand what was going on. So the health department claims that it's a common practice to alter photos without the model's participation. And Barry agrees that he signed a waiver before the shoot allowing for alterations to be made for distribution. The health department in New York City says this issue isn't about one actor, but rather the 700,000 New Yorkers who struggle with diabetes, which kills 1,700 people a year and causes amputation in another 3,000. Quote came from John Kelly, a spokesperson for the people he's a spokesperson for the health department. In a statement, he said, "Advertising to warn the public about health concerns saves lives, and we will continue our efforts to warn New Yorkers about diabetes." But given those numbers, if there are 3,000 people in New York City who are amputated because of diabetes, why not use their photo? I mean, if you have those numbers, you couldn't find an amputee. Why take this gentleman's photo and alter it as a scare tactic to force a narrative? It doesn't even make sense. I mean, I get it. You have the right to do that. But remember, you're trying to warn the public about diabetes and the dangers of it. But to alter a photo is clearly disingenuous. Now, I sent an email, in the interest of full disclosure, I sent an email to Mr. Berry, and I've yet to hear from him. But that's okay, because I still want to talk to him about it, because I'm wondering whether or not he's going to do this again. I guess he was a struggling actor, so he needed to do something to make some money. But wouldn't this make you a little cautious about what it is that you see in these advertisements? I mean, if the stats are true, according to the spokesperson for the New York City Department of Health, why not use an actual person who's been amputated? I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. Using a man who's clearly got, I mean, I almost feel like they used his weight against him. You know, he understands that he's there to do a stock photo, whatever the original stock photo was for, but selling the image and then for them to doctor the photo, I'm trying to figure out what would be, now that it's out there, doesn't this destroy the credibility of the health department in some way as well? I mean, I can't believe one stat that comes out of their mouth now, because the model that they used is obviously not in its true form. And you can, if you log on the blog, onto blogtalkradio.com/ReeseOnTheRadio and go to my page there, you'll see the of Cleo Berry. The original photo of him is there on the right-hand side, and then the doctored photo in the ad is on the left. Now, again, you know, for legal reasons, you know, they covered their behind with, you know, with the legality. He signed a contract that could be used any way they want to. But what if they had, you know, put him on an ad for rapist? What if they had put him on an ad for somebody with an STD? You know, what if they had put him on an ad for child molester? What if somebody had recognized him? I mean, he clearly recognized himself because he took the photo. But, you know, the question that now comes to mind for me is, whose credibility is shot here? And are we to believe the Department of Health anymore? And to say that this is about diabetes and this is about the people who are suffering with diabetes, why lie? In any way, disingenuous. If it's about getting the truth out there, why would your tactics be deceiving? And we'll bring in a crew so we can get their take on this, JC and Mary. I apologize. I'm controlling this on my own here. Guys, does this make sense to you?
Let me go first, Mary. Sure.
Help yourself.
He sold his image for points.
Well,
you can do what you want with it.
Well, okay, fine. I can do what I want to it. But, okay, all right, fine. All right, legality aside, you're absolutely right. They have the legal right to do whatever it is that they want to do with it. But, you know, isn't that, you know, imagine if you were going in for a photo shoot because you're trying to make some money and they put you on an ad for something that, you know, like I said, it could be for an STD, it could be for rape, it could be for child molestation, you know, some ad about, you know, show you as a woman. They do a picture of you. They doctor the picture to show that you got a black eye. And, you know, the ad is about awareness for domestic abuse. You know, your family's traveling through New York. They walk down the street. They see your picture. And, like, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, couldn't you just use a real accused person to do this?
No.
But don't they say that it didn't, the contract say that they could do soft alterations? I don't think that a soft alteration is taking somebody's leg off.
Yes, that's, again, good point, Mary. And I did forget about that point. Soft alteration. They used it.
That's a soft alteration. What's a hard alteration?
Exactly. Both ways.
No, but if they were to use someone with diabetes, imagine now. Okay, now you're out with your family, and let's say that they use a picture with your permission, or imagine like being in a restaurant and you come outside the restaurant and your billboard's across the street, and everybody that's coming in the restaurant notices you in there, and they look at you like, what the hell are you doing in this restaurant? Don't you have diabetes? Look what you've already done to yourself. Haven't you learned?
Okay, but wait a minute. What if you are his family and you are walking through New York City or wherever this billboard is and you haven't seen him in a while or spoken to him and you're like, there's Uncle Joe. Why doesn't he have a leg?
Then you call Uncle Joe and be like, well, where in the hell is your leg?
You know?
And you explain the situation to him. The point is, you sold the picture.
Go ahead, come on, Daisy.
He sold the picture. It's bigger than that.
I'm sure he would not have sold the picture knowing that they were going to do a hard alteration versus a soft alteration such as that. I mean, a soft alteration would be like, let's put a beard on him
or let's
put a little tan on the dude. It's not amputating your freaking legs.
And then you sold it for a stock photo. That photo could be used for a number of things. They could have had them in, yeah.
Again, my concern, JC, they can use it for a number of things. Legally they protected themselves because they said they can use it for anything that they want. And as Mary pointed out, for soft alterations, I don't even think that's an appropriate term here, but soft alteration. But I think that as a model, I mean, I can understand you're probably desperate for money. I mean, for crying out loud, people have done worse, you know, sperm banks, blood banks, drug testing. People have done worse.
He should have went down to the food stamp office. He could have gotten the SNAP program.
But, you know, a struggling actor, you do what it is and to make money. But do you think this is going to have an effect on people who go to these modeling shoots?
It's
definitely going to have an effect on people that go to these modeling shoots, and it's definitely going to have an effect on the credibility of
going.
The New York State Health Department.
Go ahead, JC.
They'll think twice before going, and you can't really blame the New York Health Department because those places hire ad companies to handle that for them.
Yeah, but, I understand you.
I mean, that's where you point the finger at.
Well, okay, so you believe, first of all, the ad company has covered itself. They are the ones who paid the $500, and then they use it for, you know, for whichever way they want to. But as the New York Health Department, which is supposed to be promoting the truth about diabetes, JC, and their job is not to be Apple or Microsoft or, you know, they're not selling a product here. You know, this is something that's supposed to be alerting the public. This is a public.
And what about the you know, the American Diabetes Association that works in conjunction with the state health department?
That's correct. I mean, this is a public health concern, and they're supposed to be working off the, with confidence or on the confidence of truth telling here. I mean, they're not, you know, again, they're selling a product or they're selling, if they're selling awareness, which is what they're not supposed to be doing. What they're doing is supposed to be a very genuine thing. You know, look, we're alerting the public to the dangers of diabetes, and we want to show what that looks like. So you couldn't find amputees that were willing to make this money to be a part of this ad campaign? You know, hey, look, you know, you're going to be the face of diabetes, and you're going to get that message out there. You're going to get people talking about it. They'll know you. They'll recognize you. You'll be the face of diabetes. That's an opportunity to do that. But to alter a photo,
mm-hmm.
and then
have your face out there, and every time you get into an argument with somebody, they're going to go flash in a Snicker bar on your face, and I want one, nah.
Oh, my God, Macy, stop it.
No.
Stop it.
So you believe that
if you have diabetes and your leg has been amputated and you can't say no to a Snickers bar, then bye-bye the other leg.
Again,
call me nubby.
Well, again, I think that this is the health department being absolutely nefarious and disingenuous. And I'm sorry, I almost call it cruel. Not just to Cleo Berry, not just to him. I think it's cruel to the people suffering with diabetes as using some sort of scare tactic to get them to behave a certain way. That's, you want to get awareness out there, you do it honestly. I mean, that's what your job is that you're an honest, you're the health department. I mean, for crying out loud, if what you're doing, it's not a department that gives revenue. Like, they don't get revenue, they spend revenue. They are funded by our government to get the message out to diabetes. They don't get money from it. I mean, they get money from us through federal funding or through state funding, but the bottom line is that they don't produce anything that's a profit of any sort. So they're not selling. I mean, selling a product would be one thing, because then it would clearly be disingenuous and it'd be false advertising. But showing a false image of an individual who's not amputated and trying to sell the idea that he is, as if to scare people with diabetes or to scare people who may be on the verge of getting diabetes, is false advertising.
And to use him, if they use him because of his weight issue,
clearly,
that's false advertising too, because it is not just heavyset people that have diabetes. There are people of all sizes that have diabetes.
That is all right. It's an abuse of his weight and his image, and to make a point, and it's just flat out dishonest. I just think it's flat out dishonest.
Could you imagine being his parent or somebody that, you know, and you turn around and you look up and there's your son with one leg or one and a half legs in this billboard huge picture, and you're like, what the hell just happened?
Look, even Cleo Berry says himself, he cried in front of his computer for a minute. I mean, he wept when he saw that picture, because he, in some way, felt like he was violated. And I can understand that, when your image is being violated. And this, I'll bring this point, and this is the reason why I kind of felt for him when I saw this. I'm going to try to make this the Reader's Digest version, but if anybody knows on this show, I never do that. But one day I'm hanging out at Washington Square Park in the early 90s, and I'm not much of a gambler. And a lot of my friends back then, you know, they used to all talk about playing Philo, you know, the little dice game in the hood, the little hood dice game. And a couple of my friends were there, and one of them pulled out their dice, and they were saying, oh, man, I just came back to playing CeeLo, man. I lost a whole lot of money. So we were kind of joking about playing CeeLo. Now, I hadn't played the game before, and I wasn't familiar with the rules, so I asked the guy for the dice, and I was pretending to play like I was playing CeeLo. So I'm throwing the bones, as they say, throwing the bones against the wall, you know, playing CeeLo, joking around, and a police officer walked up and told me that it was illegal for me to be playing CeeLo out in the public. So I said, we're actually not playing CeeLo. I said, I'm just rolling the dice. I'm not doing anything illegal. We're not gambling anything. I'm just rolling the dice. That can't be illegal. So he shows me his police handbook, and it says on the rules that, you know, against the law, I swear to you. He pulls out his little handbook. It's like a mini Bible, and pulls it out and shows me what the rules are, and the rules said no games of chance. So while I'm having this discussion with him about what is the definition of a game of chance, if I'm playing cards, is that illegal? He goes, no. I said, that's a game of chance. I said, if I'm playing chess, is that not a game of chance? He goes, no. I said, sure it is. We don't know whether or not the player is better than me or I'm better than him. It's a game of chance. And you don't know where the person is going to move. These are all games of chance. So anyway, in the midst of all of this, I don't realize this, but later on that night, on our local network, on Channel 9 News, I'm not watching TV, but I get a phone call that night. My phone's ringing off the hook. Turn to Channel 9 News. Turn to Channel 9 News. And there's a picture of me talking to the police officer about CeeLo. They put a black splotch over a little black bar over my eyes to cover my face, and it's off in the distance, so you can't really see my face, but everyone knew what I was wearing that day, because I was wearing a brown denim suit, like a brown denim, it was like brown denim that had a jacket and pants, and a brown hat, and everyone knew what I was wearing that day, so everybody who saw me that day called my house. So I turned to the news, there I am talking to the cops, and the story on the news is about how the cops are removing drug dealers from Washington Square Park.
Oh, my God.
And I was completely floored. I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. I'm having a discussion with him about something completely different. But the news reporter, seeing me interacting with a police officer, me being black, he being white, immediately suggested that I was a drug dealer, and because they blocked out my eye, or my face for that matter, I was still recognized. But again, they believed that they had every right to do what they did. So that being said, JC, do you understand why I kind of feel for Cleo Berry in this regard?
Yeah, I do. I understand that. I do. It's just like the story about the kid with the gun a couple weeks ago. How the media twists and turns.
However, this
situation, huh?
I didn't hear that story.
Yeah, I remember the kid CBS did the kid with the gun, and the kid said he wanted the gun to be like a cop.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant piece. Mary, did you ever see this?
No, I did not.
Well, it was a great story about a young man, actually young boy, about 5 years old in Chicago. I think it was four, in fact. In Chicago, the Chicago news reporter was talking to people in the neighborhood about a rash of shootings that was going on in this particular neighborhood. They're interviewing a couple of people, and in one particular instance, they interview a four-year-old boy, and they ask the four-year-old boy, are you worried about the violence in the neighborhood? And the little boy said, no. And he goes, yeah, really? He goes, and the little boy says, because I'm going to get me a gun. And the reporter says, oh, you're going to get me a gun? He's like, yep. And then it cuts back to the news reporters in the newsroom. In fact, one of them is Steve Bartlestein, who I know. Steve Bartlestein just shakes his head and goes, very disturbing. Now, it gave the image that violence was so apparent in this community that even a four-year-old boy had suggested that he wanted to get a gun. It turns out that another camera was there filming this happening at the same time, and it was a local college. College saw the news report and then released the entire video. And the little boy then goes on to say what they cut off. The little boy says, because I'm going to get me a gun. And the reporter goes, yeah, you're going to get yourself a gun? And the little boy says, yeah, because I'm going to be the police.
Wow.
Completely doctored the video to make it appear that the little boy was, you know, a part of gang violence and was susceptible to it, even though they know the little boy said that he was going to join law enforcement as a four-year-old. And they didn't even want to print that. So, again, this is a classic case that it happens
all
the time.
It's like, okay, that would have been a better story, but instead they make things worse by cutting that part out. It's so ridiculous.
Exactly. And again, this is all about reinforcing a narrative. It is a narrative that they have to project. It's a very, very sick one. But, you know, again, in order for you to make your point, sometimes, you know, if your point has no merit, sometimes you have to lie. And that sucks, because this, in all reporting, you want to keep your point, tell the truth. If you can't tell the truth, stop reporting. If you know, just stop doing it. And you could be upset about it. You could be angry about it. But you know what? Don't force something that isn't there. And it was tragic, what I think, personally, that four-year-old boy. It didn't make national attention, but on the Internet, it went crazy viral. In fact, you can find it on my website on recentradio.com. And I think the headline is, here's proof that liberals hate blacks. Because they do. That's another story. Anyway, I'm sorry. Anyway, it's top of the hour. We got plenty coming back. When we come back, we're going to talk about the updates on Fox 5 anchor Greg Kelly's new developments and why the New York Post is getting a lot of scrutiny for their reporting on this case. And we'll talk about why that is. It's very, very compelling to me, only not just because of my case, but because it is about truth and reporting and real journalism. So when we come back, it's Reese on the Radio, top of the hour, coming right up.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Mary had a little lamb, it screamed like a soul, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah!
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
It's Freesa on the Radio, and we are back. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening in, as we appreciate every week. And every weekday that you jump in and enjoy our show, it's not exactly terrestrial radio, but you know what? We have a good time doing it. And you know, the news is what the news is. And I don't know whether or not anyone has heard any of the latest stories about the rape allegations against the anchor of Good Day New York, the local morning show here on Fox 5 in New York. It's a it was a complicated story in the beginning because, you know, no one had all of the facts. But for those of you who don't know the story, of course, Greg Kelly, the anchor of Fox 5, Fox 5's Good Day New York, who used to work at the Fox News Channel, is... now under investigation for an alleged rape that took place on October a week ago on Tuesday, the alleged, well, the accuser came forward and went to police and said that Greg Kelly raped her at her office building at a law firm in downtown Manhattan. The investigation has gone several places, and the news reporting has been extremely thorough, but only in one place. Well, I apologize, two places. The New York Post and the Daily Mail. And the Daily Mail has been following the lead of the New York Post. The New York Post has been getting a lot of extensive information about this case. What we've learned so far has been based upon leaks in the media by the New York Post from unnamed sources. And those unnamed sources, of course, are all appearing in the New York Post. As we reported, you know, one source says that the story sounds like BS. Many sources are saying that it appears to be consensual. Well, now the new breakdown is that the boyfriend, who is around 48 years old, has had a vasectomy. This is how they knew, or how he knew, that he could not have impregnated his girlfriend. There were also reports that said that he had become suspicious with her because she was refusing to have sex with him. And she was refusing to have sex with him because she had just had an abortion and could not perform. These are all coming out. Details are coming out. Albeit no names have been released, even of the boyfriend. In fact, in a New York paper report today, which I'm almost certain was in the Daily News, they even broke down the boyfriend's dossier without revealing his name. Apparently, he was one of the top 200 who ran in the last marathon. He is a boating enthusiast. He's a kind of a macho man. He's very, very, you know, kind of has a very, very big ego, a lot of bravado, which was why no one was surprised afterwards that he would approach the commissioner of the New York City Police Department the way that he did, suggesting that Greg Kelly, the commissioner's son, had ruined his girlfriend's life. All of these reports came out. The girl is an aspiring model. She's a paralegal, works at this law office. The text between the two of them, one report described them as 2 days of foreplay before the alleged assault and the alleged sexual contact took place. It's gone everywhere. This story now has come out in most places that this appears to be extremely bogus. And that the girlfriend was forced because the boyfriend said, if he really raped you, prove it. And she was forced to then go to the police. Greg Kelly, according to reports in the New York Post, has handed over his telephone, his text messages, and emails. It's also being alleged that in those emails through a source, the woman not only talks about getting together beforehand, but afterwards there were messages exchanged or communique exchanged where she wanted to do it again. And, you know, pretty much she got busted by her boyfriend, according to the report. The argument that is being made about the New York Post and about them revealing these sources' comments and whether or not it was journalistically prudent. Now, for several reasons, I can understand why the rest of the press is making this argument against the New York Post. One, because we know the New York Post is a tabloid, and sensationalism is their forte. But this was an opportunity, I believe, for the New York Post to do something that they did not do in a Dominique Strauss-Kahn case. And in the Dominique Strauss-Kahn case, all they could do was vilified Dominique Strauss-Kahn. He's a philanderer. He's a sexist pig, you know, calling him all types of nasty and inflammatory names. You know, when the story came out, all they wanted to do was believe that he indeed raped this woman. And he was absolutely excoriated. He was indicted in the press. But what happened was, and a lot of you probably don't know this, and I paid very close attention to this, but when the story started to come out that it was false, this woman, Miss Diallo, was falsifying her claims that the New York Post had egg on its face. Not that they retracted the comments that they made before, but then they had to go in an entirely new direction. What I noticed was the comments on this story online at NewYorkPost.com, NYPost.com. And most readers went after the New York Post, whom readers believed you guys wanted this guy guilty before the evidence came out. And now you're trying to cover your behind by making it look like you're all over it. So now you're revealing everything you possibly can about Miss Diallo to appear that you're doing fair and balanced reporting, which they did not. So now when things stink to high heavens, the New York Post has decided they have the duty to be as fair and balanced as they possibly can. Maybe slightly. But this is what it is that they should be doing from the beginning. This is what every reporter should be doing, getting the facts. Don't vilify, demonize, demagogue the accused immediately because you may not indeed know the facts. I understand that they believe that this sells papers, but that's not what people want. People want the actual news. Right now, we're in a state where anybody can get news from anywhere. You don't need to sensationalize your news anymore. You don't have to, because we can get that from any place in the world. What people want is the story, and the story's sensational in and of itself. It's Greg Kelly, a popular TV anchor, a 29, 30-year-old woman who claims she was raped. Report the story. That's all you have to do. Now, again, as I said, the New York Post is receiving scrutiny from other news organizations. Here's why. Because those news organizations have an agenda. And the agenda is to never scrutinize or check the veracity of the accuser. Ever. In a rape case. In a rape case, you are guilty until proven innocent. You don't tell the truth. You don't tell any mitigating factors. You don't give that up. You just tell Greg Kelly accused of rape. Here's what she said. Greg Kelly had no comment. End of story. Because they need people to believe that this could have possibly happened. And most people who read those stories immediately believe it. That's what the New York Times has done. That's what the Daily News has done. That's what several other places have done to report this story. Yahoo News as well. To go after Greg Kelly's dad because he is the chief of police, because he's the commissioner, to suggest that the district attorney's office won't do its job because of a conflict of interest. Because it is important to them to set a narrative. Why am I? That's a theme today. Noticed? But is it fair for the New York Post to get crap? Is it fair for other newspapers or other news organizations to criticize the New York Post for giving up so many details? Or should the Post have not done it? Should the Post have just stuck to the story and not have investigated it? Because it shouldn't be the job of the press, right? They're only reporting the news, but should they not investigate it? Should they not give the details? Because that's what I thought reporting was all about, getting to the bottom of the story. Let's go to Mary, because I like a woman's view on this. Mary?
So much to say, so much to say. First, I would like to say I'm totally enraged at the fact that there is that this is even still going on, that there's even still they're going to, you know, possibly pursue a case, that any of this is going on. It is quite evident that the broad is lying. She lied. She's busted. She needs to go crawl underneath a rock somewhere and hide. But as far as that, I think they should investigate. I mean, that's why I read the paper. That's why I look at the news, because I want to know what the real story is. Now, whether they're telling the real story or they're not is, you know, is only to be seen. But I want to know the details. I want looking for pictures of the broad. I want to see what she looks like. I want to see what the boyfriend looks like for whatever reason, just because I do. I want to know who she is. So I'm waiting at the edge of my seat for them to come out with more information so that I can find more information on her and on the boyfriend.
And why do you want that? That's an interesting dynamic. Why do you think?
I don't know. I just wanted, because, like, you know, it's like putting a face with a story. So we can put Greg Kelly's face to the story. You know, maybe it's getting a little bit more personal. Whatever it is, I don't know, but I'm telling you, for about 3 days, since Saturday, I bought the Daily News, and it was revealed that she was, that she ends up being a blue blood's blood. So for whatever reason, I want to, because I'm a woman, maybe that's what we look at. I don't know, but
well,
I want to know.
Do you think that a part of it might be fair play in this case? And what I mean by that is, here's Greg Kelly's picture being plastered all over the news as this accused rapist. And now that some of this story is coming down that there may be something false.
Well, no, it's not. Let's correct ourselves and not say maybe. The facts are, it is false. She lied. I mean, she lied. To me, those are if what we have read in the papers is true, she has lied. She's a liar, and she deserves to go to jail for what she has done to this man and his reputation. and for the money, the taxpayer of New York City, the taxpayers of New York City, the money that she has spent.
Well, I don't think that, see, that's an interesting thing, because I don't believe that.
I'm so enraged over this. It is unbelievable.
I don't believe that the district attorney's office is going to pursue charges against her, but here's why. I don't believe that
according to the paper, and I still have the paper, as a matter of fact.
Uh-huh.
Hold on. Let me get the story. According to this paper, go ahead. You can keep going.
What I heard was, according to this, or what I believe according to this, is because Greg Kelly was not arrested, that in essence, there was no damage done on a legal standpoint. There was an investigation that was taking place, and there has been no arrest. So retribution, in some degree, would be moot, on her, unless they decided to prove or to pursue whether or not she was indeed lying. Now, would you want taxpayer dollars going into an investigation to verify the veracity or lack thereof in this case? In other words, would you want them to spend taxpayer money to pursue a case against her because she indeed, she made this alleged false claim? We can only call it alleged because we don't know. But if it is indeed false, after all the money that was spent on whether or not it was true, then investigate whether or not it was a lie and then pursue charges against her?
I think that there should be charges brought against her. And I think the fact that there's an ongoing investigation that is spending New York City's taxpayers' money. Regardless whether he's jailed or not, money has already been spent. So, and they should... If I was a resident of New York City, I would be willing to give up some of my tax money to pursue her in a legal court.
So you believe that we should diligently go after false accusers, and I agree with you there.
Most definitely.
I believe that the argument is stronger if Greg Kelly was indeed arrested. If he was arrested and perp walked, the damage had been done. And sure, there should be legal action if indeed we can prove that's the case. But, I go back to the Dominique Strauss-Kahn case just to say that there's been no efforts by the district attorney's office to pursue Ms. Diallo in her case because their argument is that they didn't believe that she would be a credible witness. They're not conceding that she's lying. And I think that's going to be the case in Greg Kelly's charges, that they're going to say, well, there's no corroborating evidence that she lied. We just don't have any corroborating evidence that a rape took place, and they'll wipe their hands of it. And that's what I believe that's going to happen in this case, is that, Greg Kelly's clean. He didn't do anything. The relationship, we believe, was consensual. There's no evidence to prove that a rape took place, and, they're going about their business. But I don't see them pursuing this. But they'll just look at it as, look, we investigated it, it turned out to be false, and then they'll just walk away. And I agree with you, that may not be the correct course of action. I think that there needs to be something of a deterrent, if you will, for people who may make this charge again and wasting taxpayer dollars on false claims.
She should, the case last year, this case this year, there has to be some changes. There has to be because for those people that accuse people of raping them and it really happened, definitely, I'm all for jail time and the rapist paying for everything that they did. But these false accusations, and it's just ridiculous. It's taking advantage of our legal system. Taking advantage of the fact that you are a woman and you can just say, oh, this dude raped me and that's it, and you're going to go to jail, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, is preposterous. It's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense to me. And again, I'll say this again, and I've said it before, this enrages me as a woman because now this is setting a precedent of, oh, is she lying or is she telling the truth? I mean, what are we going to believe? All these other false stories have been out here. What if something like that happens to me or one of my family members or one of my friends
or any other woman for that matter, what if something really does happen to somebody and you go and you tell someone and it's not pursued the way that it should be pursued because of all of these wolf-crying stories?
Well, this is true. I mean, and again, this is going to, I like to use the word muck up the criminal justice system because, but again, I don't think that in any way this is going to cause the police department or the district attorney's office in any county, in any city, for that matter, to do what it is that they're supposed to do, and that is to dot all the, cross the T's, dot the I's. This is clearly what it is that they should do. They're not doing that. They should be doing that, but they're not doing it. But, you know, the arguments being made, and this, and I don't know whether or not you and I, but let me explain to you what it is that I'm hearing so far from bloggers, or what I'm reading so far from bloggers, is that what they should do in the criminal justice system is clearly pursue and diligently pursue claims of rape, regardless of whether or not the story seems preposterous. Now, I have a problem with that on many levels. But the reason why they're saying that they should pursue it as diligently as they can is because even if it clearly if it sounds like a false claim, right, that there are women out there who might think that they won't be believed because of this woman. Like, in other words, saying in Greg Kelly's case, this woman isn't being believed. The story is turning out to be BS, as they quoted in the paper. That there are women out there who are sexually attacked, who are raped, who may not come forward because this woman is being so scrutinized in the press. So they're saying we can't put this woman's business out on the street because real victims may suffer. So let's hide the false claim as much as we can, you know, so that we don't give this this atmosphere of real victims thinking they won't be believed. But that's no one's fault but the false claimer.
Exactly. And if anyone should be, you know, if anybody should be angered or upset or frustrated with anybody, it should be against her. It can't be against anybody else. And I see that point, but in the same sense, what about those people that are being falsely accused? Okay, let's think about how this is going to affect true sexual assault victims and how they're going to think about, oh, well, should I really, you know, say this? Is there evidence? Am I going to be able to pursue a case or whatever? But what about these men and or women, because, you know, I mean, it's not well known anywhere that women attack men in that way, but it has happened. But what about all these men that are falsely accused? What about them? They're victims now.
Yeah, and, you know, there's another blog that I read today by a woman who's a former prosecutor who made that point, that said that, you know, for the rest of, you know, his life, Greg Kelly, that being, is that this is always going to be a part of his life, that this will always be a footnote, but it will always be a part of his background, and it will continue to be for the rest of his life, having done nothing wrong, that the accusation of rape damages your reputation, even if you are cleared. I think another article, someone said, the headline was, Greg Kelly could still have a good day. Using the pun about his TV show, saying that if the investigation proves to be false, proves that this allegation is false, then Greg Kelly should be able to return to Good Day New York and continue with his job reputation intact. However, if he had been arrested, if he had gone to trial and been acquitted, that no producer, no network, no one would have touched him. Because, again, as I've told plenty of people, a not guilty charge is not an innocent, probably a not guilty verdict is not an innocent verdict. That's the reason why the criminal justice system uses the term not guilty. It means that the prosecutor could not prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. It doesn't mean that the accused didn't do it. It just means we couldn't prove that he did. So in essence, you are never ever found innocent of a crime. You're just found not guilty. So because there's been no arrest, because there's been no trial, Greg Kelly is allowed to go back with somewhat of a reputation. But imagine if they had pursued this and they had decided to wait to drop all this evidence and drop this bomb on them during a trial. It would have completely destroyed his career. He would have never, ever been able to do that again, do his job again, to go back into working in network television again because of that scrutiny that goes to this charge. It's sad that that's the state of our union, but there's a reason why that is, and I think it's because it's commonplace. If you're accused, you're somewhat guilty.
But it shouldn't be commonplace. It shouldn't be commonplace. And I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
And of course it shouldn't be. Of course not.
It shouldn't be commonplace. And the justice system for these types of things just needs, something needs to change. There has to be something. And one of these cases has to be the front line for that. I mean, something has got to change. And if that is the case, that people, you know, since he wasn't brought up on trial, since he wasn't arrested, and he doesn't have to go to trial, and he doesn't have to prove that he's innocent or that he's not guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, then that's the way they should pursue every case, not just his or not just the Dominique Strauss case. You know, well, they didn't do that with him any with Dominic Strauss anyway. They arrested the dude, took him right off the plane. So, you know, it should be done this way then from here on out. If you're accused, you should have to have evidence that you did something. And what is this going to lead to? Is this going to lead to men, you know, you go to have sex with somebody, and, you know, everybody's got an iPhone, everybody's got an Android, everybody's got a phone with a recorder on it, you know, everybody's got video cams. So what now? Are you going to start recording and videotaping? Do you have to start recording and videotaping your sexual acts just so that you know that no one can ever accuse you of raping someone?
And that's what it's going to boil down to.
I think that's what it's got to happen. And just to let you know, that's what I do. I record every conversation I have with anybody I find questionable.
Wow.
I record every conversation. I got it all on tape. I keep it on tape.
Sad that we have to end up being our own detectives and our own investigators. That is really, really sad that society has come down to that.
Well, we live in a society where people that are always looking, a society, first off, that doesn't take responsibility for its own.
I don't remember.
We're looking for a society that's looking to make a fast buck. We're talking about a society that's looking to make a fast buck. And we've built a society that's built on covering its own ass.
This is also true.
And then covering its own ass, like I said, with the prosecution, the DA's office, where, especially with their immunity, oh, my God, that has to change.
Yeah, that's, again, in and of itself, you know, that you're very, very right about that, JC. What I find incredibly odd about the governmental immunity of the district attorney's office is that they are allowed to pursue a case even when the facts clearly, you know, exonerate the accused, and when you try to make that point or try to prove that point, or when it's proved beyond a reasonable doubt that you're not, you know, that you're not the accused, and you can prove that you can't pursue them, that they're allowed just carte blanche to do whatever it is that they want, and they say their argument is, you know, in the pursuit of justice. You know, that's why they, you know, they're allowed to do, they're allowed to, I don't want to use the word break the law. They're not allowed to break the law.
They are allowed to break the law.
Use it to their advantage.
Use it to their advantage. See, the job of the is to pursue justice for the accused and the accuser. and that is to get to the bottom of the truth. And if your pursuit is only to get a guilty verdict, then you're not doing your job as a prosecutor. And your job as a prosecutor is to investigate that case to the fullest extent, to make sure that this is not, you know, this isn't false, that this isn't, you know, this isn't a lie. And, you know, this is, you know, again, I'm wondering, and I'm very, very passionately following how Greg Kelly is going to return to Good Day and how it is that they're going to bring him back. I'm very interested in finding out how they're going to do that if this case is indeed dropped. According to the reports out of the New York Post, they're saying that the case may be dropped. The investigation could be dropped as early as this week, if not as early as next week.
As long as there's an open case, he stands accused.
That's right. He stands accused. That's absolutely right. But I don't think that the prosecutor's office is going to do anything to vindicate him other than to say that the allegations proved to be are maybe false.
And you know what the saddest part about all of this is, that he is the commissioner's son, and people are going to be all over the place. Oh, well, he's the commissioner's son, so he got special treatment. Of course he didn't get brought up on charges because he's
the commissioner's son. Yeah, he was. He was given preferential treatment.
Look at the facts, people.
But okay, fine. I'm not going to argue the fact that he's the commissioner's son, but, you know, in some degree. But if they were pursuing arresting him and they were investigating this and he immediately contacted his lawyer, remember, the lawyer gave up crucial information about their tryst as early as Thursday. She reported it on Tuesday. They gave up information that contradicted her claims immediately. First of all, if the police sees that, or if the investigators at the district attorney's office see that and they immediately have doubts, no, they're not going to pursue it, and nor should they. Imagine what people would have said if his lawyer said, we gave them documentation to prove that this was a consensual act, and they still sought to pursue the commissioner's son. The argument would have been, this is out to get the commissioner, to embarrass their name, to embarrass their good standing. The prosecutors are under a tremendous amount of scrutiny, even having already done what it is that they did in the Dominique Strauss-Kahn case. Remember what they did in Dominique Strauss-Kahn. They took him off the plane that afternoon at 4 o'clock. This woman claims it happened at 12, at about 12:29. He was off the plane at 4:30. That night, he was in handcuffs, and they immediately rushed to get an indictment before they knew all the facts. And that's the reason why they're not doing it. You can say that he got preferential treatment, but the reason why they're doing it this way is because of exactly the way they handled the last case. And that being said, let me add one more point to this. When people were complaining later on, when some of the falsehoods started coming out about the Dominique Strauss-Kahn case, they went to... No, sorry, right before the facts started coming out, they went to Mayor Mike Bloomberg and asking him about the perp walk, because there had been some rumblings about whether or not the perp walk was necessary. And Mayor Mike Bloomberg responded, well, if you you won't get the perp walk if you don't do the crime. Now, in essence, what happened to due process? Here was the mayor of New York City saying that you got a perp walk because you were guilty of something.
You were guilty of something.
Exactly. Never been.
Not only the mayor, but he's the head of the whole entire police department.
Exactly. So here's the mayor saying that everyone who's on a perp walk is guilty of something. Therefore, forcing that narrative. That's the reason why the police department does the perp walk, because they want to have people see that they want to have people see a villain. I'm going to ask you guys, and I don't do this often, but I'm going to go back to my Star and Buck Wild days. But I'm going to say, go see this movie, or see if you can see it online. It's a movie called The Paper. It stars Michael Keaton, Glenn Close, Randy Quaid, Robert Duvall, for those of you who remember the movie. There is this scene at the end of the movie where... Michael Keaton and Randy Quaid are in a police officer's bathroom in the police department, talking to a real NYPD detective named Mike Sheehan. And he talks about the perp walk and talks about why it is that they do the perp walk. So that the story that, look, the police got their man. And what does that do? This whole idea that, look at us, you know, look at New York. A crime happens in the city, we get our man. We're going to show him and put his stuff there in the news so that it promotes tourism, that New York City is a safe place to live, that you don't have to worry. The police officers are on their job. It's done nothing but to promote tourism in the city, and they collect their money, and everybody's happy. But you got to see this scene. It's a very, very poignant scene when it talks about why people like Dominique Strauss-Kahn got that perp walk and why the district attorney's office was so eager to get that photo of him in handcuffs and accuse him to be a rapist. Because it's just that, you know, it's nothing more than a promotion tactic on the part of the criminal justice system. It's sad, but it's true. So, you know, I mean, there's not much more we can say about it. Of course, we'll be covering it as we always do. I'm wondering how it is the story is going to print out in the New York papers or how it's going to come in the national media. But we'll, of course, be on top of it as we always are. When we come back, folks, I'm going to spend a little time on my favorite mayor. And you know who he is. If you don't know who my favorite mayor is, let me just tell you. East in Connecticut, man. I got to come up there and visit. It's Reese on the radio. We'll be back.
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi,
how
you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz. There's Dr. Phil. There's Dr. Drew. There's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion. But I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem. You deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reason Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life in Congress. Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom. Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
All right, folks, we're back at Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. Number's 347-308-8701. And you can check out ReeseOnTheRadio.com anytime you like. Send us an email at ReeseOnTheRadio@yahoo.com. And you can check me out on Twitter if you want to follow the show on Twitter. At Reese on Radio. I got to find out who the hell has Reese on the Radio. I think it's me. I just have to find out what the password is. I'm going to find it. When I do, I'll find it. I'm almost certain I know who has it. I mean, I think I have it. I just don't know the password. So I had to take Reese on Radio. Sucks. Kind of want to keep the whole thing, you know, Reese on the Radio. You want to change it up. Anyway. So, several stories in the news, of course. I love it. When there is some form of racism in the news, it's racism all the time on Reese on the Radio. This is where you come to get your fill of racism every day, all day on Reese on the Radio. Oh, please, you come here to listen to the racist rantings of every American. And I love exposing it more than anyone. Anybody missed it? Because I don't think anybody did. There's not one person I talk to who doesn't know this story. About East Haven, Connecticut, Mayor Joe Maturo. He is of Italian descent and got into a little bit of hot water because of allegations of police misconduct against the Latino community in East Haven. It turns out that four officers were arrested by the FBI for going after and attacking I don't want to say attacking, but I want to say I don't want to say assaulting either. They were intimidating and harassing the Latino community. Why? Who knows? But they were harassing them because they don't like them. And after the four officers, one sergeant in that group
including a sergeant, were arrested by the FBI. They went to East Haven Mayor Joe Maturo, to confront him about these allegations and to find out he was going to be doing about it. And if you haven't heard it, Mayor Maturo had a pretty, how do I put it? He had a very, very racist response, according to some people.
Why we can't always believe what we hear from the press. Never criticize without knowing the facts. What are you doing for the Latino community today? I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet. I have spent 2 years in Puerto Rico. I will probably do the same thing for the Latino community.
You realize that's not really the comment to say right now. You might have tacos tonight.
I might have spaghetti tonight. Being of Italian descent, I could go out and I've had ethnic food. And when you ask me what I was doing for Latinos tonight, I may go out and have a Latino dinner in the Latino community. There's nothing wrong with that. And you can twist it and turn it whichever way the press decides to do.
And sure enough, they twisted it. They didn't have to twist it much. Again, I'm sorry. I know it's insensitive for me to laugh, but there's a reason why I laugh. There's a reason why I have to laugh. It's because it was the most incendiary thing that he could have said while trying to be condescending to a reporter who he felt was kind of being intrusive and kind of being, you know, trying to reprimand him. What are you going to be doing for the Latino community tonight? Really? What the hell am I supposed to be? I am supposed to single out the Latino community? Everybody's supposed to be treated equally. I don't know. I may have tacos tonight. And look, if it was me, I'd have probably done it. I'm sorry. I have to be honest. I would have done it. I would have done it. I probably would have done it a bit more clever than Mayor Joe Maturo. I would have been much more clever. What would I have said? What would have been a great line? What are you going to do for the Latino community tonight? I probably would have said nothing. And when he asked me, what do you mean nothing? I would say, who are they? Do they deserve preferential treatment? I just would have asked him that. That would have been my response. Do they deserve preferential treatment? And may the reporter then explain to me why they did. Tell me how they're special. Tell me how they deserve more than any other community member. I would have just forced the issue back to them. That's probably how I would have responded. Why? Are they somehow special? Are they more special than my Polish community? Are they somehow more special than my Black community? What do you mean? What am I going to do for them? We got rid of the problem. You have 4 officers arrested. What do you mean, what am I going to do for them? They have the arrest. The FBI has arrested the people who are guilty. Now, I owe them something? What do you mean, what am I going to do for the Latino community? I don't owe them a damn thing. We get rid of the bad apples and that's it. But he didn't want to do that because he wanted to throw it in the face because I know he was a little ticked off because he probably believes that the Latino community took it a step too far. They decided that they made the argument that they deserve some sort of preferential treatment. And he probably said, yo, screw. Screw you. Yeah, what the officers did was bad, but I'm not going to jump through hoops for your community now. For what? I don't owe you squat. My name is Mayor Joe. Huh? You don't like it? Go to hell. But see, Joe, I got to give it to him. He's not much of a PR guy. You see, I told you guys weeks ago, you didn't want to believe me. And that's okay. You didn't want to believe me, but I told you.
It's the Democratic Party that's the racist. The party of the Ku Klux Klan. The party of Jim Crow. The party of Bull Connor. The party of segregation. The party of the KKK. They're the racist.
And they are the racist. Now, how do I prove that? Because the media is racist. The liberal media is racist. And I wish this would have come out before Joe Maturo made those unfortunate statements about going to have tacos. Because here is a obvious liberal reporter by the name of Mark Zaretsky. Joe Maturo is addressing him about a person that he's appointed to be the liaison to the Latino community. And listen to what Joe Maturo says, because they don't put the audio up about Mark Zaretsky. Is it Zaretsky? Am I pronouncing it right? Yeah, Zaretsky. They don't put the audio up about what Mark Zaretsky asked. Because what Mark says is even more inflammatory. And Mayor Joe Maturo do it. Listen to this.
We've reached out in our own community by assigning, you know, these are very important positions. When I make that, I didn't make this commission, the Learn Commission, for the sake of making it. We have serious problems. I could have put five people who I knew politically on that. I didn't. I went outside, and I put in outsiders, and I went, and I got to be friends with Jose Velasquez over the last 2 months. Who was I going to put on the committee? I know Jose. His heart's in the right place. Why would I go and put somebody else on there? I went, that's why they elected me leader. To do what I thought was best. I'm not here to satisfy your agenda or somebody else's agenda by picking the right type of person or people or color or language that anyone else. It's my job. The problem with Jose Velasquez by saying, well, he's not a Latino, he's from Puerto Rico, he's not an Ecuadorian. Those are your words, not mine. I picked a Latino. If there was a certain type of Latino I should have picked, well, then let somebody write it down on paper that this is exactly what I want. I want a 5'2". You want a certain sex. You tell me what you guys want, and you want me to order it?
I'm not asking you that.
Well, you did. I said to you, I put on Jose Velasquez. You said, well, he's a Puerto Rican. Okay, your point?
Well, the people who are moving quickly into East Haven, you know, the businesses along Main Street are
what?
Predominantly Ecuadorian residents from a different country. They speak the same language. You know, it's not exactly the same culture. It's not all one culture.
They're Latinos?
Yeah, they are Latinos.
Okay.
You know.
Nobody that I know of has gone outside the phrase Latinos. Everything that's been on TV, everything that's been brought to me has been the word Latinos, which is inclusive, and not picking a certain part. I mean, you want to pick...
Let me ask you this.
I mean, you're boxing me in, and you're boxing yourself in. I mean, if I had to pick an Italian, do I pick a northern Italian, a southern Italian? We're Italians. I picked a Latino. Did it have to come from a certain section of the country? You know what? I think that's a foolish statement to make, and I feel bad that you made it. I wouldn't make a statement like that. I brought in a Latino. Is he not dark enough for you, light enough for you? I don't know, Mark. I wouldn't have said that. It is not my statement.
There you have it. And you know what? This argument's being made that he said Latinos from a certain part of the country. And in essence, he's right. Because what he's saying is that there are certain Latinos who live in certain communities in the country. In this particular case, Mark Zaretsky is suggesting that because this committee that Joe Maturo has put together, he put Jose Velasquez, and Mark Zaretsky says that's not good enough because he's a Puerto Rican, as if to suggest he's not the right kind of Latino. Am I grasping at straws? Even, I mean, come on. I told you. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to make that stupid argument that there's racism on both sides, but here it was the guy who handled the problem. He said that there needs to be a committee where somebody is sort of done in the Latino community. He hired a guy who's Puerto Rican. Mark Zaretsky's not satisfied. You see my point? They're never freaking satisfied. I thought Latino was an inclusive group. Do Puerto Ricans not have the same issues that Ecuadorians have? Even Mark was stumped. tell me you didn't hear him stuff. Even he knows. And he's upset because Joe Matoro is bringing the point up that he asked the question. He's upset because now people are going to know that he was suggesting that because Mr. Velasquez is Puerto Rican, that he's not the right kind of Latino. Because the community is predominantly Ecuadorian, he needed to hire an Ecuadorian. Because these racists are never satisfied in the Democratic Party. So now we got to have a committee member for the Puerto Rican community, a community member for the Ecuadorian community. What if we got a large group of Guatemalans? We got to make sure Guatemala's there. We have to keep appeasing each group. Now, this isn't taking any heat off Joe Matoro. What he said was insensitive, not racist, insensitive. What he said was insensitive. But you see what the point is that they're the biggest racists of them all, the liberals. They're always going to be because they can't stop grouping. They wanted him to do something for the Latino community. He did it. He got a Latino representative he thought was best for the job. Now he ain't Latino enough. Is he dark enough? He's not dark enough. Is he not light enough? What is he? You tell me. I don't know. We're going to go to a break. We're going to the top of the hour. We'll discuss this some more when we come back because I know I want to hear from my crew. I have got to hear from my crew about this one. It's Reese on the Radio, and of course, we will be back. Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and if you missed the show, you probably missed this little thing that I revealed for the first time since 2007.
I'll give you another example. I've got a crush on a Slurpee. I love Coca-Cola Slurpees. Love them. I'll get the biggest one there is. I don't care how filled my bladder. I'm telling you, I've had four of them in a day, and we're talking about the big 64 ounce. I am in love with a Coca-Cola Slurpee. When I used to live in Fort Lee, New Jersey, I used to walk 7 blocks in New Jersey to get to the 7-Eleven and go get me a Coca-Cola Slurpee. Now, for a little time, back in 2007, I had an official Coke problem.
Okay. Very funny.
Tune in weeknights from 7 to 10 right here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. You never know what I'm going to reveal.
One time racism saved my life, man. I was on a plane. I was coming from overseas, and I don't know how this guy got a machine gun on the plane, but he stood up, man. He said, "Everybody, get on the ground. Nobody look at my face." I started freaking out because he was Chinese. I was like, "Why is he talking like that?" Was screaming and crying. I was the only brother on the plane. Well, I thought I was the only brother. I looked over. There was one other black dude. He's from Nigeria. I looked over at him. He was looking right in my face, man. He didn't say two words to me. He just looked at me. He was like... He didn't even talk. I knew just what he was talking about. I looked right back at him. I was like... Some white dudes on the front of the plane seen us. They were like... Oh, my God. I think those black guys are going to try to save us. We were just communicating that we understood the situation. We were both seeing the same thing. What we understood was simple. Terrorists don't take black hostages. That's the truth. I have yet to see one of us on the news reading a hostage letter.
They is treating us good. We all chilling and shit. I'd like to give a shout out to Ray Ray and Big Steve and Central Newport.
You know.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Mary had a little lamb. It sleeps white as snow. And everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah!
I never once said na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I help send against you.
Awesome.
What's up, guys? We're back. It's Reese on the Radio right here live on Reese on the Radio. On blogtalkradio.com. Did you hear me curse? I had my mic up. I apologize if anybody heard that and was offended. Anyway, it's Reese on the Radio. Live on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. We were talking about Joe Maturo. And, of course, he got into some trouble a week or so ago about having tacos. This was his comment when asked about what he was going to do for the Latino community after four officers were arrested by the FBI for harassing Latinos in the neighborhood. And this is what he had to say.
Why we can't always believe what we hear from the press. Never criticize without knowing the facts. What are you doing for the Latino community today? I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet. I have spent 2 years in Puerto Rico. I will probably do the same thing for the Latino community.
You realize that's not really the comment to say right now. You might have tacos tonight.
I might have spaghetti tonight. Being of Italian descent, I could go out and I've had ethnic food. And when you ask me what I was doing for Latinos tonight, I may go out and have a Latino dinner in the Latino community. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah, it's not like that was, you know, was a bad thing. You know, going out to spend money in the community, well, you know, it's good for the neighborhood. It's better than food stamps. So, as I said, Mark, and I pronounced his name incorrectly, Mark Zaretsky, I apologize. Mark Zaretsky was a reporter speaking to Mayor Joe Maturo. Said something off camera that Joe Maturo brought to the light, but yet no one seems to be reporting about the fact that Mark Zaretsky doesn't like the appointment of Jose Velasquez because he's Puerto Rican and not Ecuadorian.
We've reached out in our own community by assigning, you know, these are very important positions when I make that. I didn't make this commission, the Learn Commission, for the sake of making it. We have serious problems. I could have put five people who I knew politically on that. I didn't. I went outside, and I put in outsiders, and I went, and I got to be friends with Jose Velasquez over the last 2 months. Who was I going to put on the committee? I know Jose. His heart's in the right place. Why would I go and put somebody else on there? I went. That's why they elected me leader, to do what I thought was best. I'm not here to satisfy your agenda or somebody else's agenda by picking the right type of person or people or color or language that
no
anyone
agenda.
Else. It's my job. The problem with Jose Velasquez by saying, well, he's not a Latino, he's from Puerto Rico, he's not an Ecuadorian. Those are your words, not mine. I picked a Latino. If there was a certain type of Latino I should have picked, well, then let somebody write it down on paper that this is exactly what I want. I want a 5'2". You want a certain sex. You tell me what you guys want, and you want me to order it?
I'm not asking you that.
Well, you did. I said to you, I put on Jose Velasquez. You said, well, he's a Puerto Rican. Okay, your point?
Well,
nothing.
The people who are moving quickly into East Haven, you know, the businesses along Main Street are
what?
Predominantly Ecuadorian residents from a different country. They speak the same language. You know, it's not exactly the same culture. It's not all one culture.
They're Latinos?
Yeah, they are Latinos.
Okay.
You know.
Nobody that I know of has gone outside the phrase Latinos. Everything that's been on TV, everything that's been brought to me has been the word Latinos, which is inclusive and not picking a certain part. I mean, you want to pick...
Let me ask you this.
I mean, you're boxing me in and you're boxing yourself in. I mean, if I had to pick an Italian, do I pick a Northern Italian? A Southern Italian? We're Italians. I picked a Latino. Did it have to come from a certain section of the country? You know what? I think that's a foolish statement to make, and I feel bad that you made it. I wouldn't make a statement like that. I brought in a Latino. Is he not dark enough for you, light enough for you? I don't know, Mark. I wouldn't have said that. It is not my statement.
And it's not his statement. I'm wondering whether or not he's actually going to stand by it. But no, of course, the press is only bringing up the fact that Joe Maturo said in what part of the country, as if to say, and I know what he's saying, and I've listened to it, he's not suggesting that there's only one country for Latinos and they have certain parts. No, he's saying in a certain part of this country. Why would he be hiring somebody from a Latino country to be in a part of the committee inside of East Haven? That's clearly not what he's saying. But it's nitpicking because they're trying to throw another racist charge against him, even though it's clear that Mark Zarensky is race baiting here. And he's race baiting. He's showing his own racism by saying, oh, yeah, but Jose Velasquez is Puerto Rican. It ain't the same as Ecuadorian. He's like, whoa, 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 whoa. When he was first asked is, what are you doing for the Latino community? Wasn't he? So he brought in a Latino. Here it is. He totally adheres to what it is that they're demanding. What are you going to do for the Latino community? He starts a committee, gets a Latino to be a part of the committee, and now they don't like the fact that, oh, he's Puerto Rican. It ain't the right type of Puerto Rican. It ain't the right type of Latino. Let's bring in the Intrepid crew. Any arguments here, folks? Let me have it.
Lots of them.
Go for it.
Listen. First off, there's no way you're going to save this Republican mayor.
Oh, I'm not
trying
to save him.
No. Stop trying to throw him a life jacket. I see you trying. This mayor, clearly he was speaking of the country Latino. You can't say he was speaking of a Latino from this country because when he was asked, when he was told that they speak the same language, that's all that should matter to him. Because all he wants to do is communicate to that community anyways.
JC, the person who says that they speak the same language is Mark Zarensky.
Right, and the mayor's like, okay, yeah, this mayor
is that they are.
I wish I could tell you at what point in the audio where he says after he said it. When the mayor went off about the reporter claiming that the guy was Puerto Rican, right after that he goes into some spiel about the country Latin or the country Latino. I'm going to go through the audio one more time.
No,
while Mary makes her point, but no, this guy clearly he's so out of touch.
Well, I'm not going to dispute that he's out of touch, but he did what he was asked. And now they're not satisfied because the guy's Puerto Rican. Don't you think that that's a stupid charge by Mark Zarensky?
Well, that was a stupid question by Mark. If he knew that they speak the same language and that's all the mayor wants to do is to communicate with that community with regards to making the relations
then
better,
don't nitpick,
then he
right?
shouldn't have asked that question.
Exactly. But they're trying to set him up for a racist diatribe. That's the whole point, is that they've got their narrative, they're going right after it, and they want to make this guy out to be even more racist. And even when you read that story, that's exactly what they talk about. They negate the fact that Mark Zaretsky even mentions that, and that's what Joe Maturo says. You brought up the fact that he was, that was unacceptable. You're saying him being Puerto Rican isn't acceptable for him to deal with the Latino community. He's not the right kind of Latino. Please, spin here.
And what does he mean? What does he mean? If someone wants me to hire the right type of Latino, they need to write it down?
Yes, write it down. Tell me what it is that I'm supposed to do. Is he supposed to be 5'2"? Is he supposed to be a male or a female? What is it I'm supposed to do? Because, again, they're making him jump through hoops. The first thing was, hey, what are you going to do for the Latino community? So I offended you when I said I was going to have tacos. So you know what? I apologize for my statement. I am going to do something for the Latino community. I'm going to create a committee that is going to address the Latino issues. So I do that. I hire somebody that I've known for 2 months and I've gained some respect for. His name is Jose Velasquez. He's Puerto Rican. And then a reporter comes to me and says, yeah, you hired somebody to talk to the Latino community, but he's Puerto Rican. He ain't Ecuadorian. As if to suggest, oh, because he's Puerto Rican, he ain't the right kind of Latino.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on, Reese. You hired someone that you've known for the last 2 months,
and you hired
him because his heart's in the right place.
That's okay.
Yet this issue's been going on for years, and then furthermore, you're standing behind your officers.
Again, still not the issue. He was asked whether or not he was going to do something for the Latino community. He's done something. He's standing behind his officers because he doesn't believe the charge, and that's his right. That's his right to stand by his officers. He's not going to throw his officers under the bus, but he's going to stand behind them until we find out what the facts are. But there's nothing wrong with him standing behind them if he believes it. Remember, they're innocent until proven.
You're right. They're innocent until proven. Now, but when they were probed by the state, the reason why the FBI was brought in, obviously whoever investigated for the state or investigated for the town of East Haven didn't do their job.
Okay. I'm not disputing that, but you believe that just because he said from what part of the country, you thought he was talking about as if the Latins only have one country?
That's the way he thinks.
No, that's not the way he thinks. That's the way you interpreted it.
No, I don't, JC, I don't think that that's the way he thinks, because he obviously knows that there are, even he mentioned Italians, you know, or should it be a North Italian, a Southern Italian, we're all Italian. Should they, you know, be from a different part of the country? Latino is Latino. I don't see how you can make an argument on that. But my thing with the reporter is, so what are you saying about Puerto Ricans versus Ecuadorians?
Yeah,
are you saying Puerto Ricans are better than Ecuadorians, worse than Ecuadorians, totally different than Ecuadorians? I mean, Latino is Latino.
He was suggesting that Ecuadorians have separate issues from Puerto Rican, that they're different. That's exactly what he was saying. And you can't argue that, JC. That reporter, Mark Zaretsky, is saying that to bring in Jose Velasquez, he could not possibly understand the issues of the Ecuadorian community because he's different from them. That Ecuadorian...
But the point is, if they speak the same language, all he's doing is to communicate. Now, he brings that information from the Ecuadorians back to the mayor. It's up to the mayor then to decide on what's the best approach to helping that community.
Yes, but we're talking Latino community. We can't suggest. See, I'll go all the way back, JC. Then I would say that the only people that the police officers were harassed were Ecuadorians. And the answer to that is apparently no. It's emphatically no. Because I'll give you another point. One of the officers who was arrested is on a two-way radio saying that he likes pulling over motorists, and he describes the motorists as people who came over here on a raft made of chicken wings.
Right.
Ecuador to United States, there are no rivers. There are no, you travel here on land. So, in essence, either the officer is a complete ignoramus, but the bottom line, he's talking about Latinos who travel or foreigners who travel here by boat.
I think it's probably the reporter or whoever probably feels like Ecuadorians and Puerto Ricans do have something different because Puerto Rico is really a part of the United States. They don't, you know, you're not coming over here on a raft. You can come over here if you want to. Most Puerto Ricans speak English. For the majority, most Puerto Ricans speak English. Most Puerto Ricans have adopted more of the United States way, whereas Ecuadorians is very much different as far as country goes and different as far as cultural, you know, cultural things go.
You know,
it's almost saying as if the Ecuadorians are more Latino than Puerto Ricans are.
But wait a minute. In that case, then fine, then I'll make the argument that what we're doing is promoting more segregation.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with you. Don't get me wrong. I don't disagree with you at all. But I think that it's like for the reporter to say something like that, and is the reporter Caucasian or is he Hispanic?
I'm assuming with his last name, Zaretsky, he's Polish.
Okay.
Since we have to denominate, or we have to somewhat identify everybody's what do you call it, ethnic background. His last name would suggest that he's Polish. But, you know, again, for him to make that point, the whole argument that this was, the stuff that made all of this inflammatory, with the exception of the arrest of the four officers, was that Joe Maduro was insensitive to Latinos as a whole.
Yeah. I don't get the difference on whether, as long as they're a Latino, they do, you know, they understand the Latino culture. So what is the difference? What does it matter?
Again, it's another opportunity to chop it down. They went Latino before thinking for Ecuadorian. It's a joke. Because, again, race haters can never satisfy them. Because once you do, that's the problem. Once you satisfy them, once you appease them, they will start asking for more. Because then it'll be, I have to have a committee for Ecuadorians born here, and then a committee for Ecuadorians who are first generation. Ecuadorian children, or Ecuadorians in college, or Ecuadorians who want grants, or Ecuadorians who want business owners. I have to keep separating them every different way because I can't have one guy handle that because, oh, he's never handled that situation before. It's wrong. The issue was, how are you going to deal with the Latino community? He brought the Latino, and that wasn't good enough either. And that's
why do you need another Latino to deal with the Latino community anyway? I mean, what are the issues? Is it because the Latino community in that part of Connecticut doesn't speak English? Is that what it is? Because
sounds like it to me.
Is it just a translation issue or what?
It sounds like.
I guess you hired him as a liaison. I guess to basically really appease them from the abuse
them.
That they had
listen
taken from the officers.
But listen to what you just said, to appease them. So are they doing this to appease them, or are they doing
They deserve being appeased. They deserve
what?
It. They were harassed by the people that they expect to protect
them. But the meaning of appeasing someone is really just like, you know, at the surface. You're not really getting into any issues. You're not that.
Yeah, you're
so,
not, exactly. You're not.
Maybe that's bad verbiage to use.
Yeah, but I'm saying appeasement in this particular case is, okay, fine. We've established that Latinos were targeted by police officers in the East Haven, Connecticut area. We've established that. What do we do? Well, most people would say, oh, the police officers have to have sensitivity training. Bumped it. That's not the case. You need to
that sensitivity training is out the window.
Get rid of them. They need to be gone. If you find out that there's anything that remotely suggests that people are being discriminated against because of their race or because of their ethnicity, for that matter, then you get rid of them. That's how you solve the problem. But you don't start appeasement practices in order to sink the group for them to get certain programs or you know, certain social economic bumps up in the... No, you don't do that. You make sure that they live the same lives as everybody else, and that is a peaceful life. Unless they...
Well, see, and that's just it. They hadn't done that up until now.
You're absolutely right, JC. I'm not disputing the fact that they were targeted. But what I'm hearing is, by race baiters, is that now the police department and the mayor's office and the community and the governor's office, now they need to start doling out this preferential treatment for them, as if the one is to, you know, to make them feel better in their community. No, we need to make sure that that doesn't happen again, that their lives are protected under the Constitution like every other American citizen.
No, buddy.
JC, let me jump in real quick. That alone and what Reese just said should be just. That should be enough. It should be enough. Why should it not be enough? It should be enough because as long as you can tell me, hey, we've got people on our, you know, on our payroll, they screwed up, we're going to get rid of them, it's not going to happen again, this is what we're going to do in order to not allow this to happen again. Of course, nobody can make any promises because you can't be with everybody all the time. But this is what we're doing. This is our effort to negate these issues.
Let me ask you a question.
So that should be enough. Do you think that they should get treatment as of, oh, okay, well, you know, none of you other people were harassed or whatever, but because you're Latinos, because you're a part of this Latino group, we're going to dole out, you know, such and such and such and such, and we're going to make programs, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and blah, 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 blah. Come on now. That's ridiculous.
Listen, first off, they didn't ask for this. They were chosen by these four officers.
Okay, uh-huh. No. Now, the people that this happened to, the particular persons that this happened to, I'm not talking about those people.
They deserve justice.
No, Mary.
I'm talking about the rest of the Latino community that was not immediately affected by the conduct of or
Mary?
The misconduct of those officers. Yes.
Mary. New Haven, East Haven, Connecticut is not a really, really big town.
Right.
And we're not talking about one incident that happened to one person. They harassed this entire community for years. To the point
so they,
where
they,
local
so what
clergy, listen.
To me is they have harassed every single Latino in that community.
From the priest down to the bodega owners to the patrons of the bodega.
I agree with you. Okay, and that's a fact.
How huge can the community be in that small town? We're not talking like an incident that happened to maybe two or three people.
I'm not disputing that. You're absolutely right. This did happen to a community. I'm not disputing
that. They harassed the entire community.
Exactly.
If your boss, I don't mean to cut you off.
No, no, no. Just stop.
If your boss, who's an authority figure over you, harassed you, and there was not a whole lot that you could do about it because you had nobody else to go to but that boss to tell on that particular boss. And I mean, you have nowhere to go to. You have nowhere to turn. You probably sit at home crying at night because I need to get out of here. I need a better job. But I can't afford to leave right now. They couldn't afford to move. They're firmly planted in that neighborhood.
So now I wasn't aware of the mass mistreatment of the entire community.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think is going to be just?
It's not a matter of what I think is going to be just. I'll tell you, in the honorable words of my Uncle Ruckus, East Haven has just seen the tip of the iceberg.
Well, you know what? Okay, you know what? That's probably true, JC, but let me explain this to you, okay? Would you know that the behavior of the police in that community is treating a certain group of people below the standards of the Constitution?
Yes.
What I'm saying is, let's look at this on a scale. Let's say everybody gets treated evenly at the 50, you have 0 to 100, and everyone is treated at the 50% mark, straight across the board, no matter who it is that you are as a race, no matter where it is you come from, no matter what age, no matter what creed, no matter what gender. Everyone's treated equally. Here's my question. Ecuadorians or Latinos in that community are treated below that 50%. Here's my question. What could the government do, or what should the police department do, in order to remedy this? Should the Latino community be treated above that 50%, or should they meet the standards of everybody else?
They should meet the standard of everybody else, but like I said, everyone that had—I mean, because obviously, every time that they arrested somebody and on false charges, it's a matter of public record. It's a matter of record. Period.
Okay.
I can guarantee.
What should they get in return for that?
They really shouldn't get anything in return. They should, okay. except for the same protection that everyone else gets.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is...
That was my argument.
I just wanted to know.
Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. They should get the same... Yeah, exactly. But on the same token, I can assure you, every individual that was harassed for no reason, and it's now a matter of record, period, because when you arrest somebody, you got to do the paperwork. And the paperwork is there, and the FBI has it in their hands.
Right.
Every single one of those individuals, they're going to sue the city of East Haven, and they're going to bankrupt the whole city.
Well, okay. Again, you're absolutely right. That those false charges, any arrests that those four officers made, are going to be under some sort of scrutiny, and there are going to be lawsuits that are going to be filed. And yes, of course, the city is going to lose a lot of money before it because they didn't. But again, that's the most that city should have to pay. That's the most that you have to make. But now you have a mayor who's got to create a Latino committee and all that other stuff. I'm sorry. I think that's above and beyond the call of duty.
No, because you know what? Listen, when they first started coming forward with the charges, being a mayor, especially you're over the police department, he should have nipped that in the bud then. He's just as responsible. I say fire his ass.
Yeah. Okay, I believe that Joe Maturo believes he should have some sort of scrutiny. I believe he's probably going to get voted out of office anyway. I mean, there's no doubt.
More than likely.
No doubt that the backlash on this, and again, that's exactly the way it should happen.
If the Latinos haven't been voting, they sure will be outvoted.
No. Mary, they vote.
Oh, they do. Latino community, like I told you before, they
they love that machine.
They love it. They
go to that machine like they're spitting out EBT.
They're very, very active.
Like, what'd you say? They go to that machine like they're spitting out EBT cards?
Well, that machine's spitting out EBT cards. I don't mean to sound insensitive, but yeah.
Is that what you just said? Wait a minute.
Do you really say
that was insensitive?
I'll take an insensitively train. No, because I have no.
Was insensitive. Now you sound just like the mayor of Connecticut.
Mary, go to commercial.
No. When I'm right and you're wrong, admit it.
It was a poor. I was insensitive. It was a poor joke made at a poor time. And let me first and foremost apologize. I apologize if I offended any listeners out there. Me personally. I wish I could get food stamps. I wish somebody would give me some food stamps so that I could stop buying them. So that I could stop buying them at, I'm not going to tell you what the going rate on the street is, but.
You're too much.
This is Reset Radio, guys. I guess we're going to commercial, right?
Yes, we are. We'll go to a break. We'll come back. It's Reset Radio. We'll wrap up the show, folks.
An Olympics hit by scandal and deficits. He rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits. Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dan Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on the Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby, twinkle, twinkle.
And we're back at Reese on the Radio, 347-308-8701. Just after 9:33 Eastern Standard Time. Actually, I have to get used to saying it. 33 minutes after the hour, right here on blogtalkradio.com. Again, please check out reeseontheradio.com or send an email to reeseontheradio@yahoo.com. My friends list on Facebook is growing. I do not have a plethora of friends on Facebook. It always makes me laugh when I see all of these people who I know should not have a crap load of friends, and they do. People with 1,000, 2,000 friends. 2,000 friends. 2,000! I mean, that's a crowd. Part of the reason why I don't go to concerts is too many damn people. Imagine life knowing that many people? 2,000 friends. But for promotion purposes, I'd like the friend list to grow. Because I don't do Facebook for anything other than to promote this show. So, that's all I care about. And I'm not going to be sending you any Farmville or any of that craziness. There's no reason for me to do all that stuff. I try not to chat too often, too. All that IMing and stuff like that. I can't believe that I'm friends with my ex-wife on Facebook. I'm stunned. I don't know what that
is. You too.
Yeah, yeah, me too. See, the only part that bothers me... Let me bring Mary in. The part that bothers me
no.
about you don't want Mary in there?
No.
let me bring this. See, I don't understand this. You see, my ex-wife still has my last name. That bothers me for a host of reasons. Now, he says, and I quote, because it's difficult for her to change her license and all of her other personal information. And so, I guess out of laziness, she keeps my life. That's a lie. See, I'm glad you said something, Mary. You believe that's a lie?
Yes.
No,
it's
please.
Not that difficult. It's not that difficult to change your last name. It was just as difficult to change your last name when you got married. As long as it tells you in your divorce decree, the judge grants you permission to get your maiden name back. You can take that copy of your divorce papers, of your divorce decree, down to Social Security, get it changed, take that down to DMV, get it changed. It's not a big deal.
One-day trip.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't... See, that's my whole point. Like, why keep my name? And it's hyphenated at that. It's me and her third husband. Apparently, she's hyphenated it to me and her third husband.
Stop it. Stop it right
yeah.
there.
No, that's what I call anime syndrome.
That is
anime syndrome. The anime bullet.
Really? I'm not familiar with that. You have to enlighten me.
What love got to do with it? She said, I made the name Tina Turner. I won't keep the name Tina Turner. I said, no, baby. No. That's my daddy name. That name got my blood on it. She said, You go where you want to go, but you know the name comes home. She earned the name. She's keeping it.
Well, I'm just saying that, she doesn't need my last name. She doesn't. I would be like, in my heart of hearts, I wish she just.
You're breaking up, Reese.
I'm saying that that she would get rid of it. I don't want her to have my name.
Well, why don't you want her to have your name? Do you think that she doesn't deserve your name anymore?
Well, we're no longer married. I mean, I gave you the name when I wanted you to have the name, but you divorced me, and we're through.
Well, as a woman, when you get married to a man and take his last name, it's like that seals the deal. You know, that's who you are. That and that's who, regardless of who you ever are with again, regardless of whether you get married again and that woman takes your last name, she will always have been the first to take your last name and the one that still has your last name.
I don't believe
and
that.
And your seed.
Well, yeah, she is the mother of my, of my son, my only child, and it's, I don't even know how to respond. It's like...
It's a possessive thing for women. I really believe that. It's a possessive thing. And it's a... I got it, and I'm keeping it, and there's nothing you can do about it. I will always be a part of you because I will always carry your name.
Go ahead, JC.
Well, the beautiful thing is, my ex doesn't carry my last name.
Okay.
Because she cheated her way out of the relationship.
Right, I got you. Okay, fine.
She got caught cheating.
Right, okay.
And, of course, the new husband's not going to... I mean,
he's probably not going to appreciate you.
It's bad enough she's tattooed by me, period. he don't want that constant reminder.
Right, I understand that. That being said, let me put it to you this way. My ex-wife, when we first met, at a nightclub, she always used to tell me that from the moment that she saw me, she said that I was going to be the father of her child. She said that when she first saw me. She was always a little obsessive. And during our relationship, I can't believe I'm going to say this out loud, but she used to write me love letters in red ink. And she said that the red ink was symbolic of blood. Very, very obsessive. And when we used to get into arguments and I would talk about, you know, maybe we need to shut up, maybe we always say, "You're never, ever going to leave me. You're going to be with me for the rest of your life."
And if I can't have you, no one else can.
Yeah. So I was always...
That was your key to get out.
Well, it should have been. But you know what? You know, for years, you know, when she left with my son when he was, you know, just out, a little older than 2 years old. And she left with him. The entire time that she was gone, every time I looked up her name on the internet, because we split up right before the internet had become sort of popular. When the internet came around and I would look up her name, I had always looked up her name under her maiden name. And I could never, ever find her. And then when we finally started talking again in 2005, you know, some 10, 11 years later, it was stunning to me to find out that the reason why I couldn't find her is because she was still sitting around with my name. I would have found her a long time ago because she was keeping my last name the whole time.
She's holding it hostage.
Apparently.
You'll be with her forever.
Ugh. You know, I always concern myself with, like, I mean, is my name going to be written on her tombstone? Maybe that's a little macabre to think.
It will be.
No,
yours.
That's a little macabre.
Yours and her.
And when she said you'd be with her forever, she meant it. Because whoa, Junior, is you 100%?
Oh yeah, I know. Yes, he is. I know. He is. Everybody says he is the white version of me.
He's the version you want to be.
I don't think.
That wasn't nice.
No, I think I know what he's saying, but no, I don't think so.
I don't think so at all. She'll find her way yet. But no. He is a spitting image of you, though.
Yes, I know. A lot of people say that. I'm probably going to find a picture to put up of him so people can see what he looks like. He's a good-looking boy. I'm very, very proud of him. Even though we're not really, really getting along right now, but I still love him. You know, and yeah, and no, that'll never change. He's my poobah. He'll always be my first and only. I mean, he is my blood and he is my life. He is a deity to me. So, you know, whatever. We'll get over it.
That was a lie.
I had a recent. Well, I saw a recent. I should say.
Hopefully, we'll be able to, you know, communicate and finally get over things.
That was a lie.
Would you stop it?
Maybe we'll.
That was not me.
I would really, really.
I know it's him.
I would really, really love for the two of us to finally get over our differences and see the errors of our ways.
That was a lie.
So, anyway. Oh, God. Anyway.
That, if you keep doing that, that can be really misconstrued. So, stop it.
No, I mean, what? I didn't say that I didn't love him. I love him with all my heart.
That was a lie.
Anyway.
At least.
He knows I love him. I'm just playing. Anyway. All right, so to recap the show, folks, before we get out of here, we...
Let me jump in one second, because I have to put JC on blast. So I know that before we went to the last break, JC came out with that comment, and obviously we were all talking, so we really didn't hear exactly what JC said. So this is what JC said, and I quote, the Latinos flock to those voting machines as if they were giving away EBT cards.
It's the Democratic Party that's the racist. The party of the Ku Klux Klan. The party of Jim Crow. The party of Bull Connor. The party of segregation. The party of the KKK. They're the racists.
They're the racists.
The party of JC.
Man.
You know, I'm never going to let you live that down.
Oh, I don't think you should. I totally don't think that you should. Anyway, to recap the show today, folks, and for those of you checking us out, thank you. We appreciate it. We have confirmed evidence that it is indeed the Barack Obama campaign that is the party of the food stamp and not George W. Bush, whether they like it or not, thanks to the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, who said on MSNBC this.
Mr. Secretary, good morning. Many people don't know that actually food stamps falls under the Department of Agriculture, and a report was just released that one in seven Americans now are currently on food stamps. What's being done right now and kind of being done going forward that you think is really addressing poverty and the poor within the country and bringing some alleviation to those kind of numbers?
Well, obviously, it's putting people to work, which is why we're going to propose some interesting things during the course of the forum this morning. Later this morning, we're going to have a press conference with myself and Secretary Mavis and Secretary Chu to announce something that's never happened in this country, which we think is exciting in terms of job growth. But I should point out that when you talk about the SNAP program or the food stamp program, you have to recognize that it's also an economic stimulus. Every dollar of SNAP benefits generates $1.84 in the economy in terms of economic activity. If people are able to buy a little bit more in the grocery store, then someone's got to stock it, shelve it, package it, process it, ship it. All of those are jobs. It's the most direct stimulus you can get into the economy during tough times. The reason why these numbers have gone up is that we've done a pretty good job of working with states that had done a poor job in the past in getting the word out about this program. States like California and Texas and Florida underperformed. We're now working with them to make sure that people who are eligible get the benefits, and therefore help stimulate their local economy.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the Barack Obama administration promoting more and more food stamps in Florida, Texas, and California, officially confirming that Newt Gingrich is right. He is the food stamp president.
Reese.
Yes?
Why don't they call, why is it the SNAP program? I mean, why isn't it called welfare? Like it's always been called welfare. It's welfare.
Isn't it called the supplemental nutrition and what is it called?
Supplemental nutrition.
Lead program.
Action pack. I don't know.
This program.
Supplemental. I like when it was just playing EBT. Eat better today.
But it's welfare.
Yes, it is. They know that it's welfare. But, you know, they call it the SNAP program, the food stamp program. You know why it is that they call it that. Because, you know, indeed, that's what
Are they trying to make it sound like it's better than welfare? You're standing on the welfare line.
You know, it's called benefits. Benefits. Now, remember, I don't know where you come from. But
it ain't benefits?
No. Where I come from on Earth, a benefit is something that you get for something. You know what I'm saying? This is a benefit you get for something else. You know, something that benefits
in
you.
In return of something.
In return of something. You know, this isn't something you should just get for living. You know, somebody get their benefits. You know, your benefits come with a job. You know,
it almost makes it sound like they're, you know, they're worthy of or they're owed something.
Well, yes, exactly. And again, they're owed something because they're poor. That's again the point of the narrative. That's the whole idea. Well, anyway, we went into that. Of course, we also an actor by the name of Cleo Berry. And by the way, guys, look up his stuff on YouTube. He's actually got a pretty funny commercial, the Oklahoma State Lottery. It's actually pretty funny. He's not a great actor, but I'm.
Yeah, he's been in House.
Yes, he was on House.
A couple other things that's on him.
You know who he reminds me of? He reminds me of what the heck is that
guy?
Me
with a ball head.
Yes, he's a heavyset guy with a ball head, but he does those beer commercials. He plays the truck driver who delivers the beer.
Oh, yeah.
He reminds me of
the
Miller
Lite guy.
He reminds me of him. But you know, he's kind of a I don't know. He's very Wayne Brady esque. I guess the best way to put it. And you know, for a big
you with a little soul.
Yes, I have way more soul than Wayne Brady.
You think so?
Oh, come on. Are you kidding me?
I would hope to God so.
A little more. Anyway.
Hey, I got a song recommendation for Friday.
Okay, all right. Well, send it over to me. I'll make sure I put it in.
No, you get no recommendations. This Friday is mine.
Okay, I apologize. Mary, then you get the song, and then I'll put it up. Anyway, we talked about Cleo Berry, whose picture that he took, a stock photo, for a modeling gig he did in New York, was used for the Department of Health here in New York City. And inside, they altered the picture to amputate his leg for a diabetes campaign, and he was a little crushed at the fact that they would use it. We argued that whether or not it was disingenuous for the Department of Health in New York City to alter his picture in order to make a point about diabetes.
So he was in that video?
He's in what video?
Nothing.
See, he's talking about me and they put their mics up. Thank you very much. I know what video you're talking about. Anyway.
Big mouth.
So, but you put her mic on before she finished her sentence. So that's why.
Exactly.
We talked about that. Of course, we talked about Greg Kelly, which has kind of dominated the news. And again, this is a story that I'm going to be harping on. If you want any other details as they approach, please log on to www.resetheradio.com, or you could just press Google Alerts so you don't have to wait on me. You can figure it out yourself. But I will be blogging about it, and I'll be leaving. I'll actually be probably doing some podcasts or some blog posts about it. We are 9 days away, folks, for our decision from Judge Maxwell Wiley. In that case, I want to thank our good friend Gene Pinkham, who put up a post on Facebook, who mentioned the fact that I was supposed to go on trial. We had my trial in March of 2011. Here we are approaching February. We have still not had a retrial, even though one was supposed to happen over the summer and in the fall. But, you know, I don't know what the case is, but we'll find out. And we'll give you those details as they come along. We haven't heard anything from the district attorney's office, but we're waiting on this decision, and that will be coming down on February 8th. And when I guess after I go to my court case, when I come back, and we do the show, I will be giving you that update, and we'll be updating you in the event that other things have changed. If you'd like to ask me other questions about that, please log on to email me at reeseontheradio@yahoo.com, and also check up on reeseontheradio.com. We also talked about East Haven, Connecticut Mayor Joe Maturo being in the news again about his comments. And, you know, if you remember the famous taco line by Joe, he now is sort of in a tete-a-tete with a journalist by the name of Mark Zaretsky, is upset, suggesting that Joe Maturo did not hire a white Latino to be a part of the Latino committee?
We've reached out in our own community by assigning, you know, these are very important positions. When I make that, I didn't make this commission, the Learn Commission, for the sake of making it. We have serious problems. I could have put five people who I knew politically on that. I didn't. I went outside, and I put in outsiders, and I went, and I got to be friends with Jose Velasquez over the last 2 months. Who was I going to put on the committee? I know Jose. His heart's in the right place. Why would I go and put somebody else on there? I went, that's why they elected me leader, to do what I thought was best. I'm not here to satisfy your agenda or somebody else's agenda by picking the right type of person or people or color or language that
no
anyone
agenda.
Else, it's my job. The problem with Jose Velasquez by saying, well, he's not a Latino, he's from Puerto Rico, he's not an Ecuadorian. Those are your words, not mine. I picked a Latino. If there was a certain type of Latino I should have picked, well, then let somebody write it down on paper that this is exactly what I want. I want a 5'2". You want a certain sex. You tell me what you guys want, and you want me to order it?
I'm not asking you that.
Well, you did. I said to you, I put on Jose Velasquez. You said, well, he's a Puerto Rican. Okay, your point?
Well, the people who are moving quickly into East Haven, you know, the businesses along Main Street are
what?
Predominantly Ecuadorian residents from a different country. They speak the same language. You know, it's not exactly the same culture. It's not all one culture.
They're Latinos?
Yeah, they are Latinos.
Okay.
You know.
Nobody that I know of has gone outside the phrase Latinos. Everything that's been on TV, everything that's been brought to me has been the word Latinos, which is inclusive, and not picking a certain part. I mean, you want to pick...
Let me ask you this.
I mean, you're boxing me in, and you're boxing yourself in. I mean, if I had to pick an Italian, do I pick a northern Italian, a southern Italian? We're Italians. I picked a Latino. Did it have to come from a certain section of the country? You know what? I think that's a foolish statement to make, and I feel bad that you made it. I wouldn't make a statement like that. I brought in a Latino. Is he not dark enough for you, light enough for you? I don't know, Mark. I wouldn't have said that. It is not my statement.
And again, we, of course, argue that. JC believes that Joe Matoro, and in his comments, is saying in some sort of way that that Latinos live in one country. I clearly see it as him saying, what part of our country do we have to get a Latino that would adhere to the demands of the press and the public when dealing with the Latinos in his community? So, I mean, we don't see eye to eye there, but, you know, that's cozy. You know, of course, I'm right. JC is dead wrong here. But, you know, I don't hold it against it.
I'm wrong.
They should have made JC the head of the Latino committee.
Are you kidding me? He's too dark.
No,
yeah.
Maybe he would have given them EBT cards like the voting.
I could pass for Cuban.
Yes, you can.
Hey, you could pass for Dominican.
Yes, you can.
Not a Cuban.
There's
Dominican.
Some dark Puerto Ricans too.
No, you should see them. You see some folks from Cuba.
Yeah, Cubans are very dark, and definitely I've seen some dark Dominicans too. I've definitely seen some dark ones there. Anyway, that's it for our show. We will see you tomorrow. Welcome to your week. We hope you had a great weekend. And we'll be back with more news, more views, as we always do. Today is always a horrible news day, so you know what's going to happen tomorrow. There's going to be plenty of news on Tuesdays. One of the best news days of the week. So join us here right here on Reese on the Radio for Mary Mary, Why You Bugging, and JT, the producer. I am Reese on the Radio. And thank you for joining us. We love you. And we'll see you tomorrow. And I know we won't be seeing you because, of course, we'll be on radio. But you know what I mean.